Before I get started in earnest this morning with the sermon, I just wanted to say, while it's on our minds, it's eerily quiet up here with few of us gathered this morning because of the weather. But I don't think we've ever stated an official policy on what our winter weather situation will be. But in my mind, if I can get here safely, then we're going to have church with whoever can be here. If it is not safe for you to get here safely, you should not come. And we will be happily praying for you when you're not able to be here. But I know it gets confusing when other congregations, are having events being canceled. But for me, it's like, wow, maybe one of you, or maybe me, really needed to be here gathered with the Christian community today and hear the word proclaimed and receive Christ at this table, right? So that's why we're going to do that, as long as I'm here at least. If I'm not here anymore, you guys can figure out what you want to do. But that's going to be the plan, right, that we're going to have church if Pastor Matt can get here. And if Pastor Matt steps onto his road and it's a sheet of ice and he falls down, well, at that point, we'll make some other plans. But that's just the general plan. And I wanted people to know that, since it's not sort of been an official announcement of that kind of thing. So with that out of the way, last week we heard about Jesus in the synagogue at Capernaum. And for the first time, Jesus stands up in the synagogue to teach. And people are astounded because he speaks with authority. And then, as if to put an exclamation point on that authority, when a man with an unclean spirit speaks to him, Jesus casts out the demon, and everybody in the synagogue is just amazed. And then Jesus moves on. And that's where our reading for today picks up. Jesus leaves the synagogue and goes back to Simon's house. This is Simon that we know, who's going to be renamed soon as Peter. And it's in Peter's house where they tell him that Peter's mother-in-law is in bed with a fever, so seriously ill. We don't know how old Peter's mother-in-law was, but if we kind of assume that Peter might have been 20 or 30, somewhere in there, that would probably make his mother-in-law likely somewhere between 35 and 50, which sounds young, right, by our standards. But Roman records from the New Testament times tell us that if you lived past 10 years old, and a lot of people didn't, but if you lived past 10 years old, life expectancy was something like 45 years, which means that Peter's mother-in-law is in the latter stages of her life expectancy at this point. And of course, this was before the era of antibiotics. So it's pretty reasonable to assume that whatever was causing her to be bedridden with this fever, it may well have killed her. But Jesus comes to her, takes her by the hand, and lifts her up. And just like that, she has a second chance. We love second chance stories, don't we? The idea that wherever we are now is not necessarily where we're always going to be. It inspires us to hear things like, Michael Jordan was cut from his middle school basketball team, right? We like to know that Einstein's teachers thought he was slow, and we are surprised to learn that he didn't learn how to read until he was 7 years old. That Dr. Seuss's first book was rejected by 27 publishers. That Vincent van Gogh sold only one painting in his entire lifetime, and that was to a friend who knew he needed some money and did it on the cheap. What's so impressive about all of these second chance redemption stories, though, is that the success for these people eventually came through their persistence, right? The fact that they didn't give up, that they worked hard to achieve the greatness which they are now known for. That's what's really impressive about these stories. But Peter's mother-in-law didn't do anything, right? She didn't approach Jesus. She didn't seek him out. She didn't ask to be healed. There was no impressive persistence on her part. She's just lying there, afflicted in her bed, and Jesus comes to her, enters in to restore her to fullness of life, pure grace. This is a different kind of story, right? This is not a second chance story about persistence winning out, but about inexplicably having another chance just drop in your lap. It's like the stories we hear about somebody receiving a terminal illness, right? The diagnosis of a terminal illness, but somehow, against all odds, they make a full recovery. Or hearing about a shooting victim who recovers from a bullet wound to the head. Hearing about a terrified law student in the middle of the road who knows that this lightning storm is certainly going to kill him. Anybody remember hearing that one? That's Martin Luther. So often these folks come away changed, right? When they survive, they have this sense that they've been given a gift, and there's this accompanying notion that to go on doing life the way they had been doing life before, to not have some kind of change happen in them after receiving this gift would be to disrespect that gift. So these people devote themselves to something bigger than them, maybe to raising awareness and research on the disease, maybe working to end gun violence, or in the case of that law student in the lightning storm, Martin Luther, dedicates himself to a life serving and praising God. I think this is more like the narrative of Peter's mother-in-law. She's healed, restored as a full participant in the life of the community. And what does she do with her newfound wholeness and healing? She gets up and she serves. Okay, sure, we could find plenty not to like about this passage. We could roll our eyes and say, oh, this poor woman, she's on her deathbed and now they expect her to get up and bring them dinner. But that's not what's going on here. What she receives is a gift. And it's so tremendous that she is overcome. All she can do is share that joy by serving others. Mark's gospel has an interesting take on service. There's a scene you might remember where two brothers, these are the disciples James and John, they come up to Jesus and they basically say to him, Jesus, listen, we've been friends for a little while here, we're tight. We want the best seats in your kingdom. And Jesus is not amused. It's not in the text, but I just imagine him giving him one of these, like, oh, guys. And then he says to them, whoever wishes to be great among you must be your servant. The metric of greatness for Jesus, it isn't power or influence. It isn't the best seats of the highest honor. It's service. Right? So by that metric, Peter's mother-in-law isn't just some poor woman stuck doing the housework. She's the first person, man or woman, in the Gospel of Mark who displays true discipleship. Because when Jesus lifts her up, she responds in service and love. The good news, sisters and brothers, is that we too have been lifted up. That Jesus, who is on a mission here already in the first chapter of Mark, he's already resisted Satan, proclaimed the kingdom, called disciples, taught in the synagogue, and put demons in their place. And with all that going on already in such a short time of his ministry, Jesus still slows down and takes the time to help a sick woman. Because this is who Jesus is. This fundamentally is who God is, the one who loves us enough to take on all the unpleasantness of humanity. And we're talking about Jesus walking the earth in a human body that certainly had aches and pains and all the limits of what a human body can do. But also Jesus opens himself up to the negative consequences of a humanity afflicted by sin. This is the God who for us in Jesus suffers mockery, dishonesty, and betrayal for the sake of being with us and redeeming us. The God who faces down death rather than let it separate us from God. In Jesus, God lifts up this woman before himself being lifted up on the cross, and then lifted up in the resurrection from the grave. All of that is for our sake, right? For the sake of lifting us up. The God who notices, who cares about our struggles and hardships, does something about them. Jesus comes to us, stands with us in the pain, walks with us, and then promises that there is better in store. That tied to Jesus in the waters of baptism, we will also be lifted up. And that is good news. It means we don't have to worry. God has got this all under control. And whether or not we understand what we experience, there is nothing that God can't handle. The hope and promise of our faith is that it will be made right. Because inexplicably, despite our undeserving, God has chosen us. God has dropped this second chance right in our laps. It's good news that ought to bubble up in us, overflowing out of ourselves and into the world, so that in joy, the only possible thing we can do is look to share it. We serve not so that we will be counted as great or have the place of honor, but in respect and gratitude for the gift that we have received. In Jesus, God has lifted us up. This is our second chance story. Will we squander away the gift? Or in gratitude, will we devote our lives to something bigger than ourselves? Will we serve? Amen.